This is CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com. It's a short week for some people. Some people are already off on holiday, like Pumi, who was meant to be here today. Canton just said to me, "Where's my sidekick?" And I had to break the bad news to him. So, you know, we try to get Pumi Mashiko and Canton into the same room after last time was such a success. But this morning, we've got Canton, which is equally as good. And maybe we'll have some more contentious issues to grapple with during the course of this conversation. It usually is like that on the Burning Platform. It's brought to you every week by Nando's, who, of course, are not afraid to get a little bit controversial from time to time. And they've got so many amazing and brilliant ads in their inventory over the years that they don't mind telling a story, even if it's got some rough edges. In fact, their edginess is probably the best thing about them. So, Canton, welcome. It's nice to see you.
My favorite is still that Robert Mugabe one.
Oh, that was great. On the swing with Pierre Vierbuta pushing him.
Yeah. Historically inaccurate, but hey, you know, yeah. Cool.
And this is more than just a little historically inaccurate, but my favorite one, just looking back even further, was that, remember the blind woman?
Yes.
With the dog.
And that got so many people upset.
And the dog is trying to lead this woman, and she goes straight into a pole because of the smell of the Nando's or something. It was brilliant. So we've got important things to talk about today. First of all, the High Court has dismissed axed Commissioner Tom Moyane's bid to have his dismissal overturned. First of all, this shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, because the fact that he even fought this as hard as he did was bizarre. The guy is crooked from top to bottom. We've got ample evidence. There's been this commission of inquiry which has made him look like a mafia boss more than a tax commissioner.
But he was a mafia boss.
Yeah, well, he even wears the big ring. I mean, the guy looks as bad as he sounds, and he sounds as bad as he is. But this dismissal that he wanted to have overturned, does he really want to go back to SARS as commissioner?
Well, I think he's desperately trying to prevent any sort of situation where he's potentially going to end up going to court.
Or to jail.
Well,
bypass it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a firm believer in
the rule of
innocent
law
until proven guilty maxim.
Sure.
But the interesting thing is that he's actually heading back to court after being given the smackdown yesterday.
What's he going to do?
Well, he says that he didn't like the tone of the judge's voice.
He must be joking.
Yes, and the Concord, you know, apparently needs to address this because, you know, he took the view that the judgment was perfunctory and was dismissive and didn't, you know, and the judge didn't apply his mind to what was going on.
Is this just a really thick skin, or is this bravado because he knows, A, he probably doesn't have the money to deal with what the consequences of his purportedly criminal activities have been, and will end up, he's just trying to avoid jail time, but he's also probably one of those people who thinks there's a political solution to this criminal problem.
I think most people have that view in terms of this country, and look, given our recent history,
it's not a bad view to have.
So I think the longer he can actually prolong the process, there's always the possibility that come next election, you know, Cyril slips on a banana peel.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Azana has to step in.
Exactly.
And then suddenly all the Zuma people are safe and none of them go to jail.
Absolutely.
Are they hoping for that?
I don't know. It's difficult to fathom the mind of this beast, but it's a likelihood.
All right. So let's just explain to people what his supposedly egregious behavior has done to SARS, because we know that SARS's investigative capacity has pretty much been chopped down to ground level.
Well, on the bright side, I got my tax refund.
Oh.
Yeah, it was only like
congratulations.
A couple of months late.
But, well, at least you got it.
But hey, it came through.
I had to go to the ombudsman 2 years ago to get mine done. And even then, it took another 8 months after that. So I suppose a lot of people are in that situation. SARS is not running at its best possible level. And a lot of people talking about how, you know, if your tax collectors aren't doing their job, then what chance does the rest of government have? Because even the worst governments in the world, even the most corrupt and messed up governments on earth, can still collect tax. It's their primary function, if nothing else, because they like to bring in the money.
Yes, but what happens, and we find this out in most of the rest of the continent, is that as governments become more greedy and grasping at that level, you end up with a situation where people become more adept at actually not paying tax. And I can't think of any of our politicians who do that, though.
Oh, no, yes. Not at all. Dig a little deeper.
When are those lifestyle audits actually coming in? Because I've been looking at all of the stuff in the periphery in terms of the entire VBS fiasco. Yeah. And
a lot of people are saying the only reason anyone's making such a fuss about VBS is because it's the EFF that are linked to it, and there are a lot of enemies of the EFF who are trying to take them down.
Well, they're probably right. And what's wrong with that?
Oh, but they don't do this to the... Why aren't they going after the bank details of Helen Zille and her family, or of Musi Maimane and his family?
Have you seen Helen Zille's car?
Lakota.
Have you seen Helen Zille's car?
No, what car does she drive?
She drives this banged-up old Toyota that she's had since God was a boy and dinosaurs
really?
Walked the earth.
Really?
Yeah.
Helen Zille has a crap car.
Yes. And it's a sensible thing. Look, I mean... I've got two cars, all right. One of them is a 2011 Subaru with about 300,000 on the clock.
Wow.
And the other is a 20-year-old Merc.
Gee.
You know, am I going to be an idiot who's going to rush out now and drop a bar on a car when, you know, that could buy a property that's giving me investment income? No. But these guys, they seem to have a fondness for these large German automobiles.
Well, you mentioned... Floyd and VBS. I mean, Floyd has like four matching Range Rovers, apparently. And no one can explain where they all come from. Four black Range Rovers, the newest ones.
I guess the idea is that way they don't know which one he's in.
So, oh.
So in the event of...
Because he's the American president. Everyone's trying to assassinate him.
I wouldn't go that far, but I think it certainly would be at the level of... do you remember Michael Sutcliffe?
Who was he again?
Yeah, he was the guy who was city manager in Durban, and he ended up renaming all of the streets.
Oh,
and
yeah, yeah.
And he ended up selling... Look, Durban at the post-94... Durban, for the entire Mandela presidency, won the award for the best-run city in all of Africa. And it was. You know, the public transport system, they had this, the minor buses. Mm-hmm. It was affordable. They ran everywhere. They ran well. But there was this corruption that then kicked in during the Sutcliffe era, and the buses were sold off and so forth. But people in Durban got really hacked off at this guy. And so one day, Michael was strolling along on the Durban beachfront, as he was, and a guy came up to him and smiled very nicely and said, "Are you Michael Sutcliffe?" And Michael smiled back and said, "Well, yes, I am." And so the guy broke his nose.
Beautiful.
Yes. And, you know, I'm
not an advocate of violence.
Not at all.
That's a good
not
story.
Not at all. But yeah, it's, you know, the people expressing their will. And you're quite right. I don't suggest for a second that you should go and harp yourself to somebody's property, but I guess we'll probably talk about that a little later on.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to get back to the Tom Moyane situation. So the judge, Hans Fabricius, said that the matter was not urgent. He also dismissed Moyane's bid to block the Nugent Commission's final report, and the application was dismissed with costs. So it's a total failure on Tom Moyane's part, not just a part failure or a misapplication in his opinion of some part of the law. He's pretty much lost everything. Yeah.
Well, for now, but as I said, he is heading back to the Constitutional Court, and you know, he's taking the view that his rights have been violated precisely because of the fact that the judge didn't give him the time of day. I suppose he was actually expecting to be in court for a long drawn out period and to be able to call witnesses, and it's always been about the delaying tactics. I mean, let's understand that his boss, and we're talking Jacob Zuma here, successfully managed to delay criminal charges against him for how many years?
I think he's still doing it.
Yeah, he's still doing it very successfully. It's a tried and tested technique.
It's the Jay-Z playbook.
It is, yes. Okay. And it's probably the Trump playbook for a while now, that's all I suppose.
Well, we're only getting started on that one. Julius Malema, speaking of court, is going to court today, and he is, of course, is challenging the constitutionality of the Riotous Assemblies Act in the Gauteng High Court in Pretoria, where his advocate on Wednesday said it was apartheid legislation which did not belong in the law books.
We have a bucket load of apartheid legislation that's still on the law books. And the trick is to actually challenge the constitutionality of the stuff one by one. So I think it's good that he's challenging the constitutionality of the Writers' Assemblies Act. But remember that he's being charged under two laws. So it's so it's quite right that the Writers' Assemblies Act is what he's being charged under. But there's also the Trespass Act, which is basically going onto someone's.
What was the event that brought this about?
This was a couple of years. You know, one loses track of this now because
I think there was one in Newcastle and KZN, and yes, one in Bloemfontein when he urged supporters to invade vacant land.
That's right, and the whole idea is that he was taking the view that the land is vacant and the people are desperate for accommodation, and let's just put them in on these spaces. And interestingly, that was at the same time that the NPA also ended up charging Praveen Gordhan. Hmm. And what was interesting was that the charges against Praveen were then withdrawn a couple of weeks after that, following the huge outcry and justifiable outcry.
That was Shaun the Sheep.
Yes, that was Shaun the Sheep. But these charges actually stretch back to that time. So it's got nothing to do with the current NPA structures or the current administration.
Okay. Just on that issue, vacant land, advocate Thembeka Ngukaitobi.
Yes.
Has
you're much better at pronouncing
been,
that than I
been
am.
Been vocal. Well, he was my advocate for a little while.
When we get to our delay, please do the same thing.
So, Thembeka said the other day when he was asked about this that vacant land taken by force is not like taking property which is occupied by force, which of course is nonsense. If you own a property and it's lying fallow, you're waiting for it to be developed, or you're waiting to make some money so you can do something with it, or you're trying to sell it perhaps, or maybe you like the fact that it's just open land.
Well, how about if I leave my car parked at the airport and I go out of the country for a couple of weeks? I mean, my car's there.
It's still your car.
It's a vacant car. It's sitting there. Nobody's using it. Surely I can take it.
Why do we have a problem understanding property?
We actually don't. But, we end up having these absurd arguments when we get into court. It's like the guy who killed his parents and then went to court and pled for clemency because he's an orphan.
That's kind of where it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's just go back to because advocate Thembeka Ngukaitobi was actually representing Julius.
Yes.
And he said to three judges, led by Deputy Judge President Aubrey Ledwaba, that the act had only been used in three instances to prosecute people. He said it's clear that Malema was being singled out so that they could silence him.
No, that's not true. Well, it might be true that post 94, it's only been used three times to prosecute people. But certainly in the entire apartheid period, it was used
all the time.
All the time, yes. So I think the three times is probably post 94. And I haven't done my research on this, so that's a thumbsuck on my part. But that would be my guess. But you see, the constitutionality of something doesn't actually hinge on the fact that it's an apartheid-era law. Because, common law against thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill.
Yeah, the Bible was pretty much put together during a particularly onerous and nasty time where slavery was completely okay, and where women were treated as second class, even third class citizens.
Well, there are some parts in the world where the Bible is applied to the letter where that's still the case.
And stone adulterers and that kind of thing.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. So that's not necessarily a good
argument. Yeah, but if we look in terms of the Writers' Assemblies Act,
yeah,
yes, it does need to be treated, it needs to be tested in terms of our constitution around things like freedom of association. Because, the interesting thing during there was also another one called the Gatherings Act. And I figure that's still on the statute books because I don't remember it actually.
What is that one?
Well, the Gatherings Act just basically meant that the minister could arbitrarily prohibit any gathering. And a gathering was defined as two or more people.
Oh, so you and your wife having a conference in your bedroom.
Exactly.
Is a gathering,
yes,
the minister could involve himself in.
Yes, he could. But it was very similar to that other crucial piece of apartheid-era legislation, which also needs to be challenged, which is the Key Points Act.
It's such nonsense.
Yes, where basically you're not allowed to photograph a key point or to be at a key point or tell people that a key point exists, except you don't know where the key points are because that's classified.
And this is what they use at places like the SABC.
Yes, the foyer of the SABC. Yeah.
If you're in the if you're at the coffee shop of the SABC, or if you work at one of the radio stations there that's in that foyer.
Well, the arrivals lounge at Oar Tambo. Every time we go to welcome
our sports
teams.
If you take a selfie there,
yes,
you're basically breaking the law.
Yes.
It's just a stupid law that no one's actually going to enforce.
Well, exactly. But these things need to be tested. But again, they only become tested at the point at which someone's rights are being ridden roughshod of. And I can't see that happening in this particular case.
All right, I want to move on to something else. Phule Mabe.
Yes.
Now, he's the ANC's spokesperson.
Yes.
And he is a member of the new NEC.
Yes.
The post-December in Nazareth NEC.
Correct.
And he's been regarded by many people as a more or less respectable guy.
Oh, really?
Well, this is what I've heard from people. He's, you know, he's a smart, presentable dude, and
He's got a beautiful speaking voice, is that it?
Is that what it is? I don't know, but people haven't really been lumping him in the category with the state capture people.
Yes.
And they also haven't thrown him into the category of complete incompetence. So in the ANC, it's slim pickings. And up to now, we thought he was one of the good guys.
I wouldn't put myself into the category that thinks that any politician currently in our ranks are among good guys. So let's just park that. Okay?
I'm trying to find a silver lining for Phule Mabe. But, yeah.
I threw in the beautiful speaking voice. Doesn't that count for something?
No, that sounds like racism. Okay. So he's been, I hate to use the word, fingered.
We're back to that.
People are saying he was a sex predator in the ANC. That there's a woman who's come forward and she said he made inappropriate advances on her, forced himself on her, came into her room, sat on the bed.
My question is, have charges been laid?
I don't know.
Because that really is the fundamental issue for me. And look, I've no doubt that sex predators exist throughout our society.
Sure. Well,
we are fundamentally all of the thing that unites us as a nation,
yes,
is that we all have patriarchal cultures.
Sure.
You know, so at that level, the likelihood of there actually being sex predators is incredibly
very high.
Yeah. And so at that level, is there a strong possibility that at least, thumbsuck here, 11% of every sample group is going to be sex predator? I think, yes, probably so.
11%?
Yes, but you see, whether they have the opportunity and the position to actually give vent to it, that becomes the crucial thing. Now, within political structures, yes, you know, these are fairly commonplace because that's the nature of politics. It is all about the power structures. And let's not talk about Zwelin Zimavavi while we're at it.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a history of these things. But I'm very reluctant to judge anyone until charges have actually been pressed and they've had a chance to actually air their side in court. And
well, that's the appropriate place for it to be tested.
Yes.
And it seems that we try to jump the gun here, and society might have expectations in the wake of the Me Too movement that these things can be tried by social media jury, which of course is not fair.
Well, it's mob justice as opposed to justice.
Correct. So what we've got to do here is, according to what you're saying, let this take its course. But the ANC are kind of jumping on it and saying they're going to have a grievance hearing on Wednesday, and his personal assistant, the woman who's saying he was sexually harassing her, is going to give her evidence. And then the ANC is going to move on this without having to explain anything outside of that to ordinary old us.
And I have a problem with political parties taking what should essentially be judicial processes subject to public scrutiny and whitewashing it behind closed doors. It's like the DeLille scenario all over again. The absurdity of if you believe that someone has done something that violates the constitution of the country, which in this case is what they are hinting at, that, you know, he's a sex predator. And of course, you know, being a sex predator, making inappropriate gestures is not the same thing as being a rapist, even though I know that's an unpopular view. But
in other words, they're different kinds of sexual predation.
Exactly. Yeah. But at very least, if it is at the level that it actually merits public scrutiny. And meriting public scrutiny means, is this something where if an ordinary person were accused of it, that person would end up going to jail? Then we should actually be going through that process. So when these guys end up putting it behind closed doors, and at the end of it, there'll be a statement that says that the parties have reached an amicable settlement and the matter has been resolved and no further questions will be entertained. And that's rubbish.
Yeah, you can't jump. You can't take away the function of the courts. And there should be a charge laid if this woman means what she says. And he must then defend himself in court.
Yes.
That's the appropriate place for it to be heard.
Exactly. And I think there needs to be more of a sense of outrage on the part of all of the groups that actually campaign for women's rights to actually get the ANC to insist that the matter be sent to court. And really, from my point of view, that is the way in which the ANC actually keeps its hands cleanest.
Yeah.
By saying, look, this is a matter between two people, mm-hmm. and it certainly had nothing to do with the party itself. So, you know, let the courts decide and we'll abide by whatever the justice system says.
By the way, whatever happened with Danny Yordan and Jennifer Ferguson?
That's an interesting question, yes.
Because that also just went away. I mean, she made the she didn't charge him. I don't know if charges were ever laid.
But he insisted that he be charged.
Yeah, and then it went away.
Well, yes, I must follow up on that one.
I'm also curious, because that seems to have been a big story at the time, and he was regarded by everyone as being this sex pest, and people also jumped to their own conclusions in that respect, because it's nice to say someone is X, Y, or Z, but then if you can't prove it, maybe it's bullshit.
I don't love
Danny Yordan, but... the law is the law.
It becomes particularly difficult when accusations are made, you know,
20 years later,
decades after the fact. And and I know that there's a strong school of thought that say things like the trauma never goes away and all of that kind of stuff. But there does need to be a statute of limitations. And the reason why that needs to be the case is your ability to either prove your accusation or to prove your innocence becomes more complicated the more time actually elapses.
Well,
so
there were two or three recent examples, and Brett Kavanaugh's
a very
appointment
good
to the Supreme Court in America, all the Harvey Weinstein stories, and Bill Cosby with all those rapes that were committed, and they have to be sent to court. And Bill Cosby was tried in court, and the evidence came out, and there was sufficient evidence for them to convict him.
Yes.
That's the way it should work.
Absolutely correct. And, you know, Harvey Weinstein is heading down.
He's going to court.
Yeah, he's going to court. And that's exactly the way that it should be. But the difficulty that I have is that when people make these accusations and you have no platform on which to give your own point of view, mm-hmm. or explain circumstances that might have occurred at the time, and I'm not suggesting circumstances to weasel out of it, but viewpoints differ hugely in terms of stuff that goes down 20 years ago. And no doubt Mr. Yordan in this case would have, his crew would have a different viewpoint on things, and his accuser would be able to produce witnesses who have their own viewpoint as well.
But it is interesting that it's just disappeared off the radar.
Well, it's disappeared off the radar because journalists have a short attention span. And what
so
was that?
So do the public.
What was that? Sorry.
Yeah, they get distracted by everything.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
All right. We want to talk about the BLF, but we'll save that for last. I want to go back to the ANC for one last time this morning. Jabu Mabuza, who's at Eskom, or was at Eskom, claims that all South Africans are responsible for power cuts. Now, Canton, have you been going around cutting cables or stealing electricity or not paying your Eskom bills?
I wish I was.
Then you would have actually had some money in the bank for
yes,
Christmas.
Yes, if I was living in Diepsloot, for example, you know, I'd be, you know, enjoying free electricity. And
yes.
And well done to them for actually figuring out, you know, how to jig
the system in their favor.
Exactly. But what an idiot. Mabuza, I mean, really. What an idiot.
Well, he says we're all to blame. We're collectively, we've all got ourselves into this situation.
Well, we have this particular absurdity that has been pretty much the narrative of South Africa since, even going back to the apartheid years as well. The apartheid politicians sang from the same hymn sheet. And that was basically, it's never their fault. It's always all of us must pull together to fix things. And that narrative continues to this day. So every time there's a disaster, the economy is tanking, it is important for the public sector and the private sector to pull together and to actually create jobs.
Platitudes.
Yes, platitudes. But
do you remember a man called Alec Irwin?
Yes, you're talking about the loose bolt.
Well, he was the one who also, when Eskom started its first round of load shedding all those years ago, and we realized there was a big problem, he was the one who said, no, collective responsibility. It was still under the Mbeki era.
Yes.
Collective, we're all collectively responsible. There was no one to blame. Now, that's so convenient for a politician.
Yes, it is. And the reason why I mentioned the loose bolt is you might remember that he was hinting that the reason why we started having load shedding was because of sabotage at Kuburg. And that someone had dropped a loose bolt into a nuclear reactor, and apparently this had, you can't make this stuff up.
He did.
Yes.
All right, so do we just disregard Jabu Mabuzo? Do we fight?
Well, look, let's unpack what's actually gone down in terms of Eskom. And,
right.
And the issue right now in terms of the fact that Eskom is, they don't have access to coal in order to keep those power stations going. The reason why they don't have access to coal is because of, well, there used to be a company called Exxaro. Do you remember
that? I remember Exxaro.
I had shares in Exxaro for a number of years.
Before that, they were Iscor.
No. Iscor was the Iron and Steel Corporation, which then became
Exxaro.
Exxaro was a resources company listed on the JSE.
Okay.
EXXARO. Mm-hmm. And a significant chunk of their income used to be from providing coal to Eskom.
It was a good business. The Guptas got in there.
Well, it was a good business, but then the Zuma administration brought in this requirement that in order to sell coal to Eskom, you needed to have 51% black ownership. But anyway, to cut a long story short, I sold my Exxaro shares while the going was still good and got the hell out of there. But ever since then, the Gupta-related companies came in, and obviously they then wanted to sell coal to Eskom at a significant premium from what the previous providers had been selling to them. Meanwhile, all of the people who were in the coal mining business, Anglo-American, for example, very quickly began getting rid of all of their coal interests that were providing supplies to Eskom. So
because they weren't being given the contract.
Yeah, so they flogged those businesses. And so you have a situation right now where there's a particular low-grade type of coal that the Eskom power stations need to use. And I understand that the cost on that stuff is around about 200 rand a ton is what they want to be paying. All of the coal that we see sitting on the ships that are heading off to China is high-grade coal, that sells for in the region of between 900 to 1,100 rand a ton. It's not the type of stuff that needs to be going into these power stations.
So that's too good for our power stations.
It's too good for the power stations, but you have people who are getting outraged saying, why is our coal going off to China?
I was one of those people because I didn't understand the difference between the grades.
Yes, but also, well, if you want to use that high-grade coal in these power stations, and I'm not sure about the actual mechanics of, because you know surely if you have coal that burns more efficiently, you might end up with a situation where you overheat your furnaces or something. I don't know the engineering of that to be, but basically, if you are willing to pay 1,100 a ton as opposed to 200 a ton, between 200 to 300 a ton, which is what Eskom currently pays, then yes, you'd be able to get access to that coal. But remember that right now that these are mining houses that have actually said, all right, Eskom is kind of out of the picture,
mm-hmm.
and we actually going to
focus. Who would
want
to supply them?
Yeah. So no. Now that you've had a situation where Mabuza turns around and says, no, actually, there's no such law that you have to have 51% black ownership. And then you had MoneyWeb going back and taking a look at Eskom statements over the year, and they said, no, actually, it was the Eskom policy that there needs to be 51% black ownership. So Mabuza then turned around and said, no, actually, we're very happy to take coal from anyone who's willing to provide it at that price point. But, of course, all of the mining houses, you have to ensure that you've got customers for your coal. And so those are committed to contracts overseas. And
well, they want to sell to whoever's willing to pay.
Yes, and at the highest possible price.
That's what business is. So in other words, you're telling me there's a component of this that is just plain government legislated stupidity.
Well, in this case, it wasn't even legislated. It was essentially an executive decision taken at the ministerial level by the then minister, Malusi Gigaba. Who was the person who actually triggered this process at Eskom. And yes, fundamentally, it's all about the stuff-up that is black economic empowerment.
So BEE is the reason you get load-shedded?
That we are getting load-shedded right now, absolutely. But of course, that was on the pretext of allowing the Guptas the way to get in, because remember that the Guptas are black in terms of the Zuma administration definition of things.
All right, let's turn our attention, speaking of black, to the Black First Land First party. They're planning to meet with the Independent Electoral Commission to explain why they shouldn't be banned from participating in the 2019 elections. It's been a hell of a week for them. Andile Mritama was all over the place the last few days, saying that we should kill the white man in his droves.
He's kind of short. Did you notice that?
He's short. He looks disheveled.
Yes.
He is disheveled. He was thrown out of the EFF. Before that, he was thrown out of the ANC. He doesn't have a home. And he's desperately clawing for any kind of relevance here. But we do need to take people like him seriously. Because if you have people of any standing whatsoever, and even if his party's got five people in it, you can't be calling for genocide, racial slaughter, which is what he called for.
Yes.
It's racism. I mean, there are a lot in the leftist media who don't want to call it racism. Because it doesn't suit them. They want to call it something else because they believe racism can only go one way. But this is nothing short of that.
Well, I think the meeting with the IEC is probably the least of his worries, because there have been charges now laid against him. And so that legal process has to go through. To my mind, it's not the job of the IEC to be playing. The IEC has an electoral code that they need to abide by.
Yeah.
And essentially, at the time of registering of a party, I don't believe that you can actually deny party a right to get registered based on the fact that you have party members who are making absurd statements. Because if that was the case, there would be no political party in this country that would be allowed to be registered. I mean, really, they've been...
And anyone can start a party. I mean, the whole principle of democracy is if you can gather yourself enough of a constituency, then you should have representation.
Yes, except in Andile's case, he doesn't seem to have the money at this time to actually put down his deposit for...
that the real problem?
Well, but remember that...
Does it cost to register a political party?
If you want to contest everything, so in other words, you want to contest the provinces as well as... the National Assembly, it's about 600,000 rand.
Okay.
And essentially, well, for the National Assembly alone, it's about R250,000.
Uh-huh.
I think it's about 280,000.
Okay.
And if you win a seat in Parliament, then you get that money back.
Oh.
So the whole idea behind putting down a deposit is to ensure that there's no frivolous contestation of elections. Because if you think about it, if you didn't have that barrier to entry, you would have the Siyasangweni political party that...
Well, your ballot would be 10 pages long.
Yes.
Full of stupid parties.
Exactly. And so the way in which it works right now is good, you know, on the basis that you put down your money and then you win your seat. And you really need only about 43,000 votes per seat. Oh. To get into Parliament. So I think...
Siak, do you know 43,000 people? Because you could be in Parliament. You don't?
No.
Well, I think if you just take your audience on at any given minute during the morning, and I just tell them, guys, I need all of you to go to the poll.
Yeah, I think that's a fair thing to ask of our audience.
Yeah, you know, just go to the polls right now.
You got to go and vote anyway next year.
Put your cross next to the Siya Sangweni. What I'm reading his T-shirt. It says "Everlasting," the Siya Sangweni Everlasting Party.
That's a good one. We have had some bizarre parties in the past. I remember in '94 there was the soccer party, the kiss party. You remember them?
The Dacha party.
There have been a couple of crazy parties along the way.
Yes. Well, but that was particularly...
But they could actually gather enough money together to make it count.
Well, actually, no, because in the first election...
Anyone could do it
because, you know, at that time it
that
was...
The Kwankwetla Workers' Party was part of that ballot as well.
Yeah, so the whole idea was to level the playing fields. And so we had this absurdly long ballot sheet. But hey, you know... It still worked.
So the BLF, just frankly, they don't have the money. They're just poor. They're losers. I'll say it. You don't have to say
it. Yes. Well, look, all of the evidence is that they are poor. But, you know, let's remember that, you must be seriously hard up to be expelled from the EFF, which is what happened to Andile. Remember that, you know, he used to be one of their MPs.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. And, you know, if the EFF won't have you because, they're...
You're too radical for the EFF.
Yes. Well, I don't think it's necessarily too radical. It might be that you're too stupid.
Maybe, because it seems that that's... His mouth is running all kinds of circles around his own ability to control it. So he's clearly going to end up in criminal trouble, as you've already said. And now the political party is unlikely to be registered.
But what's particularly fascinating about Andile is that he has this, shall we say, small but adoring contingent of white women who seem to sing his praises. Have you ever noticed that?
Really?
Yes.
I have not.
Okay.
Who are these women?
No, I'm not going to name names because you see one, but
on social media?
They are on social media, so simply check out... And some of them might or might not have been commentators associated with ANN7. So,
okay. All right, I got you.
Yes.
All right, well, then that's useful information. But, of course, Andile's Twitter account's been suspended as well.
Yes.
It's amazing. So Jack Dorsey and the Twitter people actually do respond to genocide. They don't respond to so much else.
Yes. You know, but and
because it's such a cesspool, Twitter, but they will shut Andile down for genocide.
It is a cesspool. You know, again, I'm of the view that, you know, Twitter should not be shutting down accounts for genocide. You know, because how the hell are we going to keep track of what the idiot is saying now? Because, you know, he's going to go underground to his WhatsApp groups, and we're not able to actually flag him anymore. So everyone who rushes out and says, you know, shut down the guy and take him off Twitter, and you know, frankly, the celebrations now that the guy has been taken off Twitter. No, guys, actually, you've got this wrong. You know,
we need to know what's going on.
Yes, I want to know that this guy wants to come and kill me so that I can take precautions, and you've shut that down. Yes, deep sigh.
Well, I don't know what else to say about him. He's always been an agitator, right? He's some kind of an activist for whatever constituency he represents. There are people who, you know, believe that Black First, Land First is precisely the kind of flavor that they want their politics to be. And it might be a small contingent of people. Who knows? It might be 10 of them, for all we know. Deputy president. They have a whole...
Yes, but I guess she's so articulate, by the way, that deputy president.
Is she?
Didn't you notice? Yes. There were a bunch
Luabe
of...
Luabe or whatever her name is.
Yes. There were a bunch of tweets yesterday where she was essentially telling all and sundry, and we're talking about Black people that she's talking to, and literally telling them to fuck off and die.
Really?
Yes.
God, I must go to her timeline.
Go and check her
that
timeline.
That sounds like fun.
And you have, you know, reasonable people on Twitter, and there's a significant amount of them, you know, turning around and saying, well, you know, from the deputy president of a party, that's I think it was Themba Maseko who was...
He got into an argument with her.
Who made this comment, yeah. And look, I don't think we should... We should certainly take the calls for genocide seriously, because there's always... some idiot out there who is going to pick up a weapon and go and try and inflict violence upon someone for whatever reason.
Oh, here it is. She just told, yeah, she told Temba Maseko, F you, moron.
Yes.
Zanele Luana, that's her name. Well, Deputy President of the BLF, a teacher against regime. She's a teacher? Or a teacher against regime change? Against all forms of subjugation. Down with imperialism.
Difficult to say
down.
Because most of these guys are not big on punctuation.
She's got 10,500 followers.
Well, you know,
it's not enough for a seat in parliament, though.
Yeah, well, if she's got a further 33,000, she'll be able to get a seat in parliament, I'm sure.
A guy called Hansin Zeke says she teaches swearing on Twitter. That's what she teaches.
But surely the question in terms of BLF or if it's Black First, Land First, why is it BLF?
BLF, they haven't even got the right acronym there,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Someone needs to tell them that there's a word missing.
Yes. So I think in that particular case, you know, whether they're... At this point, of course, Gareth is reading stuff on his screen instead of paying attention to the conversation.
No, I'm listening to you, but there's so much shit here. It's just amazing. It's like it really has become ridiculous.
A screen time distraction is real, people.
Okay, I'm off there. Can't watch it.
All you can do is laugh, really.
Yes, but you need to learn the Zuma laugh. Going back to Black First, Land First, when it comes to the elections next year, then we'll get a chance to really see whether... They have any type of support.
To gauge them?
Yes.
What do you think? What's your gut feel?
My gut feel is no. You know, certainly he's... all of the boxes that Julius ticks.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Julius is charismatic. He's highly articulate. He knows... Julius knows how to play the sound bites. You know... Julius constantly gives people a masterclass in terms of how to actually play the soundbite game.
Yes, and, correct.
And Andile doesn't tick any of those boxes.
No.
You know, he's got the charisma of a guppy, and you know, probably the attention span of a goldfish, and he's unkempt, and he, you know, what's to aspire to in terms of Andile.
Unkempt. Unkempt is my favorite word.
It's completely. You know, Julius, one thing you cannot accuse him of is being slovenly. No, the guy carries himself, even when he's wearing his red overalls, you know, he carries himself with a certain aura of, I don't want to say respectability, but gravitas, certainly. You know.
And when he opens his mouth, journalists just lap it up.
Yes.
Not so much with Andile.
Yes, but you know, there's a certain amount of adoration that kicks in there in terms of the journalist.
That's probably true too. And speaking of journalists, this is really our last point for the Burning Platform this morning. There's always a huge outcry when journalists are threatened, as if they have special rights that the rest of us do not. Because there are people in South Africa who are victims of domestic violence every other day. There are people in South Africa who are threatened, workers who are threatened by their employers. People who threaten each other in the street, road rage, all kinds of terrible things happen. And politicians do take pot shots at whole swathes of the community. Julius has famously gone after Indians, Andile now after white people. But it seems when journalists are targeted, then suddenly it's really demanding of an outrage.
I think the issue that we've got there is that the current crop of journalists, if you think about them, they're actually relatively young. And they've never actually had to report in a really difficult situation. A really difficult situation was, having cops knocking on your door at 3 o'clock in the morning during the apartheid era, which is the stuff that I had to deal with.
And, sure.
And so suddenly now they're discovering that politicians are not to be trusted in terms of. So it's just that they haven't learned lessons that actually apply everywhere in the world. And my take on this, guys, just shut up, because this is the lot of being a journalist wherever you happen to be anywhere in the world.
Yeah, just ask Khashoggi.
Yes. So on that basis, you know, stop. The issue right now why journalists are so upset is because they're looking at Malema and they're saying, but we treated you so nicely. We happily pushed your agenda against Zuma. And now you're turning around.
Which they did.
Yes, which they did. And now you're turning around and attacking us. And what's wrong? I thought that we were friends.
So they're hurt feelings.
They are hurt feelings.
Is that what it is? So people yes. like Adrian Basson, who are wailing and screaming at the moment, hurt feelings.
Well, yeah, he definitely had hurt feelings. I mean, in fact, I think I'm going to write something that actually interrogates that whole scenario that he laid out in that opinion piece of his. You know, where he was talking about this thing of, we went out to bat for you, effectively. I'm paraphrasing what he said. And immediately at the point at which anyone starts talking about we, I get very, very uncomfortable. I never claim to speak for anyone other than myself.
Yeah.
And particularly in the case of journalists, if you've got a herd mentality, that means you've got an agenda. And that for me is a problem. So, irrespective of whose agenda you're pushing.
So he's missed the fact that he's gone public about his adoration and support for a politician. And then he's telling that politician, my feelings are hurt. You know, you need to love me, Daddy.
Yes. But at the same time, members of the public are taking a look at this and they're saying, but so essentially what you were saying is that all the time you were doing this, it was not because it was doing your job, but because you were pushing a particular anti-Zuma agenda. And if you can do that in that particular context,
then what other agendas
are you pushing? And that really cuts to the chase of this.
Oh, and we wonder why newspapers aren't doing so well. Among all the reasons that digital technology is superseding them and that there are preferred sources online. But one of the problems is they're shooting themselves repeatedly in the foot.
They have consistently. Look, there are parts in the world where newspapers continue to do very well because they still keep to the basics of journalism. And, you know, very good example, Hong Kong, for example, has daily papers that and there's no drop in circulation. And but of course, the other thing in terms of newspapers is that your ability to read newspapers is tied to literacy. And you know, ever since the introduction of outcomes-based education, one of the outcomes has been that we haven't had literacy.
It continues to be a problem, which is why we hope that the Burning Platform will get to more people because they can hear it. Than people who might not be able to read, right?
Well,
we're equal opportunity information sharers.
Well, at very least, people will tweet about what's being spoken about. I think the attention span for long conversations is actually not as good as we'd like to think it is.
Well, for this morning, thank you for sharing your time with us, Canthan. It's always good to see you, Canthan Pillay, and the Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's, right here on cliffcentral.com. Once a week, you get all the things you need to know. And as I've said the last time Canthan was in here, sometimes we just take his entire opinion footstoots and pretend it was ours. At your peril, but you may do that.
Well, if the coffee improves, then you certainly feel free to do that.
All right. Thank you very much. Next week, we'll make sure. Well, not next week, but the next time we see you. We'll
are you guys calling me back?
Coffee. Yes, of course.
Oh, okay.
People like having you around. Thank you so much. Canthan Pillay.
This is CliffCentral.com.